But be careful for surfaces that get kind of slippy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to rhyme with that. I guess I got lippy.
No notes. 10 out of 10.
Lippy. Like if someone's giving you lip, is that an actual adjective?
I'm pretty sure people will use that colloquially.
Cool.
It feels very kind of old-timey gangster.
Hey, don't get lippy on me, Johnny.
Exactly. I got a little scared hearing that. I was like, oh, shit.
I just had a fedora on my head as I said it.
And a cigar.
Oh.
Little bowler hat.
Well, this is a lippy affair. It's a podcast.
Oh, we got to lip it up here because there's no cameras to capture the gorgeousness.
Lip it up.
How's your day, cuz?
Pretty good. Midterms are coming up.
Oh, yeah.
In my neck of the woods. So I've been...
For psychology school.
For psychology school.
For the uninitiated.
Yes. And I'm having to reconcile doing this with, like, wanting to become a professional psychologist. But we could talk about that off the record.
Reconcile, like, doing a podcast in general? Or
like,
being
calling pop stars fat. In a recording.
We cut that stuff out, though, Julian.
Oh, shit.
Whenever you cross
Well, I guess
line,
I'll still tell people who the pop star was.
just not into a microphone as much. No, it's funny because you'll be like, oh, I want to be salacious. And then right afterwards, you'll be like, I don't want to tear these women down, Brian. I'm like, well, geez, let me go in.
I never say I want to be salacious. One simply is salacious.
Yeah, you'd never say it out loud. I just know for a fact that you enjoy salaciousness.
I do.
And manufacture it when none of it's presented to you.
And I think I've quoted this on the podcast before, but my mom had a quote that smart people talk about ideas, dumb people talk about other people.
But of course.
But of course that phrase is about people.
Yeah.
But and that's also hard when you're running a sociopolitical commentary like the one we do right here. On this
Would we even call it that? This is the Guantanamo Bay's podcast.
A Cuban cousin Kiki.
I'm Brian Bogart.
And I'm Julian Goza.
And thanks for hanging out with us, you guys. And
Brian,
what?
Our streams, dude. Like, I'm trying not to like let it get to my head. I'm not going to like rush out and buy a car.
I would not. I would, believe me, you should not rush out and buy a car based on our streaming numbers. But it is fun to see like a very noticeable uptick.
We are recording this episode from the inside of our...
The Empire State Building. What's up, New York? Like
TRL.
Well,
I was
going to
say like an expensive car or something.
No, it's still just my apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that would just be really stupid is like... Just there's no upside to recording a podcast in a car, and then we don't even have the video portion of it to show people how nice the car is. So that'd really be like that'd just be a bad move, I think.
Yeah. Well, speaking of visual components that people can't see, I told you.
Are we about to give them some more?
Yeah. Cool. I for one of my midterms, I have to do a genogram. So that's like kind of mapping out your family, marking addictions, affairs. It could get really extensive.
Messy.
It could get messy, but look at it. Look at how good it came out.
Yeah.
There's software to do this, but I don't like being on a computer for work-related things.
How are you going to? Because
my laptop is a television, so I don't want to use software like that for work on it. But
okay.
I did this
so
by
much
hand.
To unpack with that sentence, but for now we'll focus on this tree you just presented me. Which, yeah, is as messy, but...
Please don't read the contents
of that. No, of course not.
Also, I don't know if you could read this. It's like a very specialized language.
It's gorgeously crafted.
Thank you. I ran out of space towards the bottom.
I know. I can't wait till we start branching out into...
But it's frustrating, because like only specific therapists use it. And most of my teachers have been like, yeah, I don't use genograms. Like, a lot of people that are in, like, substance abuse treatment and stuff,
right.
Like, then it's more employed. Like, if you're finding, like, a certain genetic trait and you're trying to figure out where it pops up in the family. One thing I noticed in this genogram, though, lots of divorces.
I mean, at this point, too, you know, half of marriages, if not more so at this point, end in divorce. But are you talking about in previous generations, too?
Yeah.
Okay. Which we were just early adopters.
Well, no.
We were divorcing before it was fashionable.
Well, no. The divorced generations are like our parents, not their parents. Oh. Just one generation above us.
Okay, well, yeah. Our parents' generation is kind of the first one that made it somewhat socially
Which
acceptable.
Makes sense because it dovetails with like women's rights and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or I guess I should say women's lib.
Women's liberation.
1972, they could finally vote.
Or as some might call it, the government psyop to double the workforce. However you want to define.
¿Por qué no los dos, honey?
It was always los dos.
Yeah.
And now, you know, there's of course like the trad wife, like emerging thing. That's kind of like it's counter movement, you know, 50 years later. So what a fun little pendulum that's swinging back in another terrifying way. Another episode, though.
Yeah, another episode. And you, interestingly, you and Alex and Lauren, who are your first cousins, my second cousins,
right,
are, so my mom and her siblings have all either been divorced or been married to someone that was divorced.
Mm-hmm.
You do not have that on your side of cousins.
No, just so you know, my parents have both had previous marriages.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, wow. I always forget that.
Bruce is my mom's second husband, and Alicia is my dad's second wife.
Oh, it was the go-go 80s. What are you going to do?
Yeah, both. I'm not going to air out the dirty laundry here, but yeah, all that to say, I'm fortunate, of course, that they had those initial, you know, marriages, because it's
a little test run.
Test run. I mean, you don't meet someone at night school as my parents did, you know, across state and country lines, because like things went so smoothly for you from day one.
Wait, slow down. They met each other in high school?
At night school.
Oh, night school. Okay.
No, high school is where you normally meet.
And then you're saying across state lines because your dad was coming from New York. Yeah, I see.
So, you know, different state, different country for the both of them. Night school. You don't meet someone there who's like from day one had everything kind of handed on a smooth path.
Because it's night school?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, don't you kind of equate, you know, you're working full-time, you're going to school, and...
Yeah, night school's like for single moms and hustlers, honey.
Exactly. And yeah, you're already working, you know, so you're kind of working to improve yourself. That just means that you weren't handed, like, that really cushy opportunity right out of high school, which you could have back then, or, like, right out of university, you know? So you had
to... You were hungry.
You're hungry. Two hungry people in a strange land, which was Austin, Texas.
Ooh, at that time. Two hungry people in a strange land.
That's a great...
Gorgeous phrase.
Yeah.
Gorgeous phrase.
I need to write song lyric about that, but not think about my parents when I do it.
No, you could write song lyrics as you think about your parents.
Yeah, why not?
Come
why
on, not? Change the game. Your move, Taylor. Why not write a song, about, your,
song about your
heavy set Republican father?
Yeah, conceiving you.
I got to play you this like wicked house remix of a Taylor Swift song, though, from her new... It's not on her album. Obviously, someone took it and like remixed it on Instagram, and it's like...
And
fire.
The lawsuit is pending.
I don't know. I don't know how that works.
I'm sorry, Taylor. It's a joke.
I really don't know how that works. I don't know if it's like the duration of like the sample as you use it in the song. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not a lawyer.
That's why she has lawyers for that. And yeah, they're looking.
A lot of lawyers.
Like I said, legal action is pending.
So things are good.
Yeah, that's good. Things are good with you and your grad school.
Things are good with me and my grad school.
Happy to hear that.
We're getting along just fine.
Yeah. Yeah. You're made for it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This path.
I think so.
Yeah.
I'd like to think so.
Well, thanks for asking. Things are going okay.
I was getting there.
I'm just kidding. I was just like staring at you expectantly, like, and here well, it comes.
But then you invoked again grad school, which I don't know if I would. Yeah, I was looking for an exit. And you brought up grad school again, and I'm like, oh, I guess we'll talk
Here's
about this
a good
more.
Exit for next time. Yeah, how's your thing? How are you doing, Brian?
Brian, you don't even give me time sometimes to ask you that, okay. My love.
I thought I did. I thought I'd given a solid second and a half. Maybe I'm just impatient.
How are you, Brian?
It was tough. It's a tough week.
I know.
Yeah.
That's also maybe why I didn't ask.
Yeah, no, it's true. I was debating on if I wanted to be asked for a second. And then by the time it was out of my mouth, I was like, geez,
well,
out of this bottle.
Well, well.
No, the things, you know, I mean... Comedy and act, you know what? Here's the positive. I've had more of a callback streak than I've had in a very long time.
Wow.
Lately, you know, one for SAG National, which, you know, might not have gotten, who cares, but I got one tomorrow. A lot of stand-up shows. Had one last night. Have one at the Pack Theater May 15th, and I'm
it's like baseball themed.
Yeah, it is.
Huh.
Yeah,
like, what does that mean?
We're gonna find out.
Okay, cool, love it.
Yeah. And then, you know, featuring for, you know, my dear friend Austin Silver in Austin, you know, May 17th and 18th. So, hey, for our Austin listeners, let me know. And I'd love to see y'all there.
But Brian's going to hand out foam number one fingers that you could wear, like you're at a at a sports game.
Yeah, that's the comedy vibe that I try to curate.
Wear a fun sweater.
Yeah, a fun sweater with, I don't know, some kind of macrame.
Ooh. This is kind of a macrame episode. This is kind of a fluffy sweater with macrame episode.
Because last week was so dense, talking about the fallout of Cuban spy Manuel Rocha.
And this week was so light in terms of news stories about Cuba.
You know, we're spent. We won our Pulitzer we're last spent. Week.
We won a cigarette after making frantic boar-like love
yeah.
to you.
Yeah, so... Last week was our Peabody episode.
All right.
Tonight's our entertainment tonight. Tonight is our SAG Awards.
That's funny. Yeah. We are drinking Lambrusco out of champagne flutes, so yeah. There's that.
Which, by the way, cheers.
Cheers.
All right.
I wish we'd staggered our drinking so someone could talk while the other drank.
I wanted them to hear the moment that we were just both lost in the bliss of drink.
Mm, where the Lambrusco was going down my throat.
Exactly. Oh, you didn't have to do that to them.
After I did it, I was like, fuck, that was audible as shit.
It was, yeah, it's going to be really audible to that mic. Might have to bring the levels down on that one.
Yeah, so we're not talking about Manuel Rocha this week. We're certainly not talking about Cuba. Well, we could talk about Cuba a little bit, really quickly. Quick little Cuban aside.
What?
I want you to play Jeff Bezos in a biopic, Brian.
Jesus.
For you, it'd be like, turn it on a switch, I bet.
No, you think
I'm like... Is that fucked up to say? Well, I mean, you're more empathic.
Well, only if you
which
think...
Which is why you'd be the actor playing him and not him.
Okay.
You're the more empathic version of him.
I'm just saying, like, you don't think I'm like Jeff Bezos, just that I
no, could. But I think you're like a bean counter, you know what I mean? Who'd be like, it's like the James Cameron quote where he was like, yeah, a few billion people have to die in order to fix global warming. I'm like, that is what you came up with? Like, that is like, some Bond supervillain shit, but just that level of bean counting where it's like, well, if we subtract three and...
Yeah. Thanos had way more of an impact than he should have on Hollywood's elite, you know, on like just billionaires in general. People are looking at
he's
Thanos.
From Thor.
I get, well, he's in Thanos? Marvel. He's the one who snaps and makes half the people go away.
Ah, yeah. J'adore.
Well, that's James Cameron's quote was based on, you know, Marvel. And,
cause
you know,
I love Thanos snapping.
Did. Yeah.
Oh. If I'm in like a queer space and like someone says something that I'm like, you know, I'm like low key at a Baptist church. I'm just like snapping my fingers. Like
Thanos really, you know, Jennifer Coolidge started the Ben and snap, but Thanos really perfected it. He wiped out half the people in the universe with it.
Oh, Thane, no, she better don't.
You need to watch a goddamn Marvel movie just so that you could really perfect.
I've seen a few. I told I you I saw Civil War. Avengers
I don't even
Civil
watch. I've never seen that. I didn't even see Civil War. So I'm better than
I mean, I heard it was really good. And right. So I went and I was like, okay, now tell me, you know, this is. And so, and
you're
but
like
they all
mom.
Have. So this one doesn't have an helmet. I see. And so why doesn't she need a helmet?
You're like a mom in a movie theater.
So, yeah, so holding the Lambrusco somehow in the theater. It's like, is that in a champagne flute?
Where have I, the girl with the face. I've seen it before from somewhere. Where is she from?
Yeah, I won't be watching any of them.
Okay. Well, I don't think you could ever top Thanos. She didn't. So.
That's my Guantanamo Bay, really... straight up. They talk about being force-fed. I'm like, listen, like the hole gets bigger. This expands. But like Civil War, like showing me the Avengers, like my brain would shrink. It would not expand. It would shrink. Whereas if they force-feed me, my body expands. None of what I'm saying is forgivable. And I'm really sorry Guantanamo happened.
Okay, can we share one other Cuban thing before we get into easy breezy
yeah,
beautiful
yeah, yeah, yeah.
cover girl
What's
stuff?
Up?
Well, apparently Ana de Armas and Sydney Sweeney have a movie coming out called Eden. Not much is known about it, just that people are escaping to the Galapagos to have a great time.
You know how I know yeah. they ate? It's because they gonna be Eden.
No, you did not. You did not.
God, I'm quick with the puns today. Also, yes, to this entire idea. I don't know if... Well, here I... No. I like both of them a lot.
You were about to put someone down.
I was going to put Ana de Armas down. I wasn't going to tell you what I was going to say.
Well, but say it.
No, I'm not going to tell you what I was going to say, because here we protect other Guantanamo Bays. Yeah, okay. Unless they're Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, maybe Camila Cabello.
And Jeff Bezos. But also, I want Camila back. I want Camila Cabello back on the good side.
I think so. Because okay. I was catering an event last night and Havana came on. Havana. Oh, my God.
Were you not familiar?
No, I knew it.
I know, but...
That was the first time I knew it. Okay. That's the first time I heard it.
Okay. All right, so she's back in. Camila's back in.
Okay, cool. Bring.
Bezos out. Camila in.
Bezos was out, honey.
I know.
He's been out for a few seasons. God damn, my brain. What are we doing? Okay, lesbians. Oh, so they're playing lesbians. Have you said that yet?
I don't know for sure if they are. Oh. I think that's kind of like rumored.
Oh.
I don't know. People are hoping it's like a Black Swan type of thing.
Which was barely sapphic. It's like one kiss does not make a sapphic
movie. Ron Howard's directing. What does that say about it? Here's the synopses.
Ron Howard, for me, is really good sometimes.
Eden is an upcoming American survival thriller film directed by Ron Howard. A group of people abandon society and civilization in order to travel to the Galapagos Islands and find the meaning of life. So it sounds like high probability of some freaky, sexy stuff happening.
Yeah.
Right? But then it's going to turn scary and culty.
Mm.
But we're going to have a fun ride till we get there.
And I love the idea of like an expedition to an island, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm wearing a Lord Solar Power shirt right now that has like different types of seashells printed on it.
Yeah. It's a shirt I see wear a lot.
Oh, I know. It's big. That's partly why I'm like, great. I could just grow into it. And it would make a lovely sail as I sailed out to the Galapagos Islands, which my parents have been to. Your parents went too, right?
Yeah.
I think they went together.
Yeah, this has been like
20. Oh, my God. Yeah. So are your parents Sydney Sweeney and mine Ana de Armas?
I don't know.
That's hard to say because they're both a mixed couple. Whose parents would be which actress?
I think your dad is more Sydney Sweeney than any of our parents.
Oh, weird.
In terms of his genealogy.
That's funny. I was going to say that about your dad. Oh, in terms of his genealogy.
Right. Because she's a down-home kind of gal. You know, my dad.
Well,
my
Pacific Northwest. But she's not like, you know, right. A country biscuit.
Not a total. But, you know, they wear red hats and stuff.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
I don't know if she was ever photographed wearing a MAGA hat at her mom's 50th birthday party where they had a MAGA theme. If that's what you're talking about, that's not us talking shit. That happened.
That's it.
And you know what else happened? I forgave Sydney Sweeney immediately.
It was a non-issue for you. You brought it up on our podcast.
If anything, like, I found it refreshing.
Ago. Yeah.
I was like, great. Finally, someone in Hollywood that's like, yeah, sue me. Okay. Fucking Trump is at least funny.
I'm just saying my dad's a Sydney boy is all from Long Island is all I'm saying. So I think maybe you're.
But Ana de Armas is Cuban.
She's Cuban.
So I don't know. I don't know how much more Sydney Sweeney my dad is than your dad.
Okay. Well, okay. Both of my moms are from Cuba. Uh-huh. My dad's at least coastal, right? My dad's at least coastal city.
That's
type.
True.
That's
both
what I'm
Sydney and my father are from the interior.
That's what I'm saying.
Sydney goes ice skating on a lake. Jim drives a Thresher.
Exactly. And you can't tell me those are different things because they are the
they're
same.
They're not.
They're not different at all. They're exactly the same thing.
I'm very excited for this movie. I hope they play lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think Sydney Sweeney is like really turning it out consistently.
Performance wise?
Yeah. Mm. She's just so good. And like,
I haven't
like
seen a ton of her new stuff.
She doesn't seem like pretentious about it, which I always really like in a film actor. Cause I'm like, yeah, like more or less like just, you know, be like physically open, you know?
And vulnerable,
but like,
and the camera does the rest.
But
of the
you
work.
Don't have to figure out this character's like favorite flavor of ice cream necessarily.
Although, of course, like Madame Web was pretty much panned.
But to her credit, she didn't shit talk it the way like other castmates did. You know, yeah. She was like, "I saw it as a wonderful opportunity to nurture my relationship with Sony." I'm like, "Oh, this bitch is good.
She's really good. Actually,
she's so great."
Yeah. So hey.
She'll probably have a team of lawyers, too, much like... I don't know. I see bright things ahead for her. And now... And, you know, I always believed in Ana de Armas, but now I really believe in her. Because she's doing a movie with Sydney Sweeney. Do we have a release date for this movie?
It just says 2024.
Oh.
So it's going
to
be this...
I really want you to get IMDb Pro. Because then you could see if something's still filming or not.
Oh, filming began late 23. So principal filming's done.
Okay, exciting. I doubt it'll come out this year, but I hope it does. Wait, what's the... Can I see the full synopsis here? Oh my gosh! Alicia Vikander and Daniel Brühl and Jude Law. Wow. I mean, this is exciting.
I'll bet Jude Law plays a bad guy. I'm just calling it.
Hopefully. I once... Jude Law once approached me in a group when I was in Cannes years ago, like 2011.
Right, right. You were like a student intern or something, right?
Yeah. And... He says to one of the guys in my group, like out of nowhere, he's walking out with a girlfriend, with like a lady, and he turns to my friend and goes, "Did you steal my drink?" And we were stunned silent.
Right.
And he was like, "Nah," and just like threw his hands up in the air and walked out with a girl. And I was like, "What a fucking star."
Like he was just messing with y'all or like.
No, I think he was more like, because no one responded to it. He was like, "Ah, fuck, you know, fuck this group. They're not even going to answer my question, you know?"
Yeah.
But also one of my favorite Shakespeare performances, some do Hamlet. Big Jude Law.
I was about to say, him as Hamlet is like famously just a phenomenal performance.
Yeah. I love me some Jude Law.
Shall we move on to our next section?
Yeah, but you haven't said how excited you are for this movie before we move on.
I just told you it existed, and then you're like, I have everything I need to say about this movie. Just watch me work. So I really hadn't prepared anything.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like in the corner like, and another thing about Ana de Armas. It's like, he needs more oil.
You know, it's a good cast, but actually a good cast doesn't make...
No, it does not.
...a great piece of art.
Certainly not.
We've learned that. And actually, there is a pretty apt article.
Ooh, the segue of it all, Brian.
From the New York Times. It was called The Comfortable Problem of Mid-TV. The subtitle, the subheader, it's got a great cast. It looks cinematic. It's fine. And it's everywhere. I feel like this is something we could all kind of resonate with.
And you and I personally talk about this all the time.
And now... pen to paper and the fascist mouth to mic. Failing New York Times has exposed it. So we kind of huffed this article together shortly after going live. And at points we were nodding in agreement. At points we were shaking with rage and, you know, huffing and kerfuffling at the indignation of it all. Let me just kind of cite a quote real quick. From what it describes as mid-TV. And it kind of uses the updated Mr. and Mrs. Smith as an example. It says, the stars have chemistry and charisma. The series avails itself to an impressive cast of guest stars and delectable shooting locations. It's breezy. It goes down easy. But I would never have wasted an episode of a show like Atlanta or Pen 15 on in-flight entertainment like I did with this.
I still didn't fully understand the takeaway from this article, and so we kind of disagreed on something. You said that this writer is essentially arguing that people need to step it up in terms of content, whereas my main argument is
originality, especially.
Originality, which I understand. Everything's algorithmized. I get it. But I think the bigger point is the just sheer volume of it, and that's why this industry as we know it will never return to what we once knew it as, is like, even if everything was higher quality, you would still have hundreds of shows that were all higher quality. So it's hard for them to actually make a larger cultural impact without money. And so what has the money? The things that have a larger global appeal. So that's comic book movies, that's stuff that's light on dialogue, heavy on Scarlett Johansson in a onesie.
I think most importantly for them, inoffensive. Because
inoffensive, and that is where art goes to die.
Yeah, we agree.
And at any time I'm like, I should pull back and not shit talk pop stars, you're like, but
what? Yeah, I mean, but
like
is the that
fear
the whole point?
Of
yeah.
being offensive is antithetical to the First Amendment, straight up. Boom, bam, period.
And you know, you don't make art necessarily to be offensive, but it can be a consequence if you're expressing a point of view. And
that's a risk that you should be willing to take if you're putting something out there to be consumed publicly.
And it's one thing if you're taking that risk as a writer, director, actor, creative. It's another if you're taking on that risk as an entity like Netflix, Apple TV, etc., whose goal is to make money. So we make this because we want to create fun, exciting stuff. They're in this because they want to make money. And those things are not in concert with one another. And it's...
And that's one reason I've kind of pivoted in terms of like a career path.
Mm-hmm.
Like I still have my agent. I'm still auditioning. But I don't want to do things. I've done commercials for like injury law firms and like things, you know, things I don't believe in, for brands that at the worst have represented like
scary interests.
And so,
and
I
at best are just money making entities.
Yeah. Right. And so in trying to become a therapist and studying to become that, hopefully I could kind of forfeit having to think about acting as a means to an end commercially or financially. Because that's never been what made me tick.
Right. And if it's only acting that's going to exclusively write your paychecks, you are going to do stuff that you don't want to do.
And I did it, you know, and it made me feel like shit.
Right.
And it, at least those few projects didn't pay as much as I hoped they would.
Right.
I'm not even saying that the, more than they should have. I just more than I hoped they would.
But even then, yeah, you didn't even get to live off of it. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing. Mid is not a strict genre with a universal definition, but it's what you get when you raise TV's production values and lower its ambitions.
I do agree with that. I mean, ambitions feel lower. Maybe because there is such a race to just steamroll all these platforms with a bunch of content. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, and I don't think, again, it's like even a an absence of originality. I just think it's the whole model. And we can't change that. So I don't know how the industry should adapt to it. But for me, it's say you have 500 shows and they're all, you know, at the caliber of Pen 15, like, how does that still wouldn't
so is it now work? The internet that we go to for originality, you know, for boldness, for
I don't ambition. But a lot of people do.
A lot of people do.
I don't. Mm-hmm. That's why I like films more, even more than like TV series, because for me 2 hours or just under that is the perfect length of time in my life to commit to a story.
Right.
I still read, but even when I read, I like try to tear through it, because like I like it kind of being a contained experience.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I've always, you know me, I grew up a big sitcom fan, The Simpsons and adult animation, and series, you know, series that can last for a number of years.
But those are episodic.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bring up Lost again. Okay. Like, sometimes if you're following a narrative that closely, it's really hard to actually pay dividends back to your audience.
Well, and to stick the landing after, you know, kind of like a few years of really not knowing what direction you leapt and trying to tie it all together neatly in a bow.
Yeah. That's why the best series are already conceived, like, from beginning of series to end of series.
But there were shows that took big swings and still are even now, just not at the same maybe rate, or, you know, we talked about the saturation of it all, but Game of Thrones changed so much.
Just over the course of its run, even before House
of
Dragons?
Right, like if you, I think there's I think two major pieces of like television that really informed a lot of what came after.
The Sopranos.
Well, so Sopranos is the inception.
That's the Wizard of Oz.
Yes. That's the inception of it. And kind of more recently, and especially in the multiverse direction, everything's gone. I think Marvel has so much to thank Rick and Morty. I've said this before.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Game of Thrones, if you got people in a focus group together and said, hey, would you watch a show where all your favorite characters die and there's total chaos, you don't really know what's happening, and you're often like scared and angry, everyone in that folks group would say, no, what, are you fucking crazy?
You're saying that's what it became?
That is what the show is.
Oh, just on it, like out the gate, season one.
Yeah, you know.
I wouldn't know, I never saw it.
I know, and it doesn't look back. But then what happened? After Game of Thrones, every show you felt like it had to kill off a major character or it didn't feel like the stakes were high. I feel like you saw such a normalization of main characters dying after Game of Thrones premiere.
Because it becomes more like cannon fodder. it becomes like just a little popcorn in a giant bucket is what you're saying. So so characters are more dispensable. Stories are more malleable. There's less of an incentive to actually have a wholly realized vision because essentially you're just milking the tit for all it's worth.
And Game of Thrones, well, Game of Thrones was original. The ethos of it and the author, George R. R. Martin, was I didn't want to write a fantasy story or just any story where people didn't feel like the main characters were in real danger. Because if you're watching a show and, you know, the main character is Matlock and Matlock's in a dangerous situation, well, Matlock's not going to die because you got to come back and watch Matlock next week. So George R. R. Martin was like, I want you to feel like these characters are in real danger and I'll put them in real danger. They will die.
I still think you're discrediting The Sopranos in specifically in that context.
Fair enough. But Game of Thrones was written before The Sopranos premiered on HBO.
Like the books?
The books did.
Okay. Well, yeah. That's different than like an actual
television. No, but no. And that is why Sopranos is the inception of it all.
Right.
So I will agree with you there.
Right. That's the Torah, honey.
It is a Torah. But, you know,
Game of Thrones, Genesis.
The production value for it, too, and the scale of it was, I guess, different from The Sopranos.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sopranos, The Inception, and then I think more recently, Rick and Morty and Game of Thrones. And that's just kind of what I noticed. And then so much mid-TV has been trying to recapture that magic.
Yeah. I also think that this article is now part of a larger series of like people just overusing the term mid. Like, I think...
Okay, Zoomer.
You know, a little bit. I don't know. Yeah.
Mid is not... Another fun quote.
Tell me what mid is not.
Mid is not the mediocre TV of the past. It's more upscale. It is the aesthetic equivalent of an Airbnb modern farmhouse renovation. Or, and, you know, steady yourself, Julian. I'm a Krongbin fan too. But it says, or the identical hipster cafe found in medium-sized cities all over the planet. It's nice. The furniture is tasteful. They're playing Krongbin all the speakers. The shade-grown coffee is an improvement on the steaming mug of motor oil you'd have settled for a few decades ago.
Motor oil?
I think it's talking about how coffee quality is generally improved.
Okay. For the most part, I loved this article and I thought it was like snappily written.
Right.
But to invoke Krongbin,
right,
which like isn't, I mean, I don't know, but I don't think they're playing that at these quote mid-tier, like, you know, artisanal coffee shops in like flat quote flyover states. I just thought it was shitty to invoke Krongbin. I'm like, don't bring them into this. Like, they're still kind of like an early band. Like,
yeah,
you know, they're only a few albums in. Like, let them rest. Why not invoke Taylor Swift? Do that.
Right, right. Well, because Krongbin, you know, keep in mind, and I've seen them multiple times. They've headlined and played in so many festivals at this point.
I know. I saw them in Spain. So I know they're big.
And I've been watching them, you know, on the circuit over 5 years now.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you first?
I'm early to Krongbin.
More than
2018.
I think that's around. Okay, sorry. We're gonna have to measure dicks.
Either
this
way,
one.
I'm just saying.
No. Keep going.
I mean, they're from Texas. I saw Houston. Them in Austin. Yeah, they're from Houston.
Yeah.
But and we don't have to make this a Krongbin pissing contest. I'm just saying the whole idea about the article is that they use Krongbin as an example of a band that's trendy, but you know, but also very agreeable with a lot of trendy people's tastes, and you shouldn't feel so attacked by that.
I know. I just think it's shitty to bring up like a band that has nothing to do, like even to even, I don't know.
But this is great publicity for Krongbin.
Oh, I was about to fall into that trap. I was like, Brian, they don't need the publicity. Everybody knows them. But I will concede, you knew about them earlier. I've learned about them in 2020, so wow. Look at me talking shit.
Yeah, so maybe I'm the Krongbin authority here.
And maybe I'm just mid. No, maybe you're the Krongbin authority, maybe I'm Krongbin.
Oh, no.
Boo-hoo. No. I love Krongbin. How dare I?
I think this
that's my impression of a Krongbin song.
This is like it's a compliment, I think, to Krongbin.
Okay, cool.
To be mentioned like that.
Well, that's because you're a bean counter, though.
Do you know what bean counter means?
Like counting things.
Like an accountant of sorts.
Yeah. So you're accounting how many Starbucks Krongbin is being played in across the country. So for you, that would be like great, right? But like, I don't know. Like, that doesn't necessarily equal, like, I don't know if I'd feel good about myself if I was a musician. And it's, oh, well, I guess they're not saying Starbucks. Oh, just cut this whole tirade out. We're out of Lambrusco.
Shit. I saw the wheels turning and Julian realizing more and more that, like,
I was like, and another reason they wouldn't be played at Starbucks? And he's like, that's not the argument this article's is making at all. Not at all what we're
talking about. And the corporation.
Even though that's another problem with this article. If it wants to talk about coffee shops that are mid, why go after, like, local artisanal coffee shops? Like, Starbucks is mid. Maybe mid is populist. Maybe they're the same fucking thing.
It's just upscale. It's upscale. I don't want to say mediocrity.
But mid does not mean upscale generally.
Well, I think what...
But I think in the realm of television...
Yes. It's saying upscale mediocrity. And I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
I try... You know, for a long time, I was like, you know, I just want to see all new stuff. I just want to see all new stuff. There's so many shows out there. So, like, I'm just going to press play and not even think twice. And man, oh man, if that was not a totally discouraging experience, because so much of it was so bad that I was just like, oh,
I felt a little vindicated when the article mentions Mr. and Ms. Smith, because I saw two episodes with our friend Maddie.
Oh, yeah.
And she was like, I think I'll keep going with it. And I was like, enjoy. Like, I know that this will end with me feeling just kind of like, eh.
Mid. Yeah.
Not too hot, not too cold. Just right.
A real Goldilocks of a situation.
Yeah. And that's what's interesting about this, too. It's like maybe sometimes that comfortable middle isn't gratifying the way it would be for Goldilocks, because art, again, should be challenging. Mm-hmm. You've seen some of the art on my walls, homie. Like, it's not immediately, like, visually accessible.
It's just a pacifier. You know, mid TV can be a pacifier to kind of encourage us to not reach and take swings, you know? And
I think that's another argument, too, that we could make, is like mid-television should be like shitty reality shows. Like, right. Don't do scripted things if you're not going to treat them like something worthwhile.
I totally agree with
you. I think that's kind of where the Venn diagram overlaps between you, me, and this article.
I'm like, y'all, we already have mid-TV. It's called reality.
Yeah, it's called reality, and which should be unionized and stuff. Should be treated like scripted
and
TV.
And it's very successful. You know, it's very successful. It's its own genre. It is mid-TV. But we write words on a page for a different goal.
And like...
For a different goal.
I'll drag it for a second. That new Kristen Wiig show on Apple TV.
Kristen Wiig has Palm, a new show?
And with Carol Burnett. Palm Beach? Wow. Palm Royale.
Okay.
Incredible cast. Kristen Wiig, Laura Dern, Carol Burnett.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And I saw two episodes and I was like, I know what they're doing. Like, and I'm just not, like, it's not good enough to have these actors, you know?
What's the writing
just
point
has
of,
to be so much more dynamic.
Palm Royale. What's the whole point?
I'm not sure. Because I saw it out of context, the one episode I saw. So maybe I'm not a totally, but there's no such thing as a fair judge. But anyway, but. My brain now, like, I have so many thoughts about this that it's just oozing out of me, like vaginal discharge.
Well, ooze it out of your mouth a little bit. We got some time to kill.
What I like about motion pictures and television is that they're in motion. And I know this is going to sound like an argument for big superhero blockbusters, and that's not what I'm trying to do. But I like movement. And I like the concept of showing things and not telling the audience things. And a lot of these shows, Palm Royale comes to mind, Swans, Capote and the Swans, that feud.
Yeah.
It's a similar thing where, like, so much of it is just, like, dialogue. It's, like, literally two people sitting down. And that shit hits in theater.
Mm.
But with cameras and stuff, I'm like, come on, I need a dolly shot or something. I need to track as I'm like, show me. Like, that's why I like Tarantino when, like, he has a close up of someone like opening a jar of mayonnaise or something.
Yeah, yeah.
There's like a kinesis to it that's so gratifying to the human eye.
Right, right.
And I'm not saying like slower filmed things shouldn't be made, because like sometimes it hits in a certain way. I'm thinking of like Antonioni's big epics in the 60s that were like in the desert. And
but you're right, there does seem to be a sort of template with this kind of mid-TV formatting that we talk about, and it, you know, there's some dolly, some camera movement here and there, but it's all kind of like I don't want to say lazy or sloppy.
It's just two people talking.
I know the people who work on it. It's just
two people talking, dude, and we're so above that. We would never be two people talking just like that.
You understand the irony of what you're saying right now.
Well, that's why I'm like gesturing wildly to you so you could see that I'm in on the joke.
Yeah, good. Hey, listener, Julian was doing this gesturing thing.
But that's podcasts. Yeah. So us just sitting here like two little potatoes in the oven, that's the whole point.
We don't have to shoot any bad guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're out there. We're not shoot. You wouldn't shoot even Osama bin Laden, apparently.
Don't remind them. But I'm just thinking about television shows and like how like, and movies. Like show movement, show things being grabbed and opened and things being hidden under cushions. And, you know, I don't know. Like there's just less kinesis to it all.
You know what's something that caught my eye that I want to bring up with you?
Oh?
Just because you're a champion of the canceled.
Mm.
Michael Richards,
mm-hmm.
who played Kramer in Seinfeld.
Yes.
Reunites with Jerry in a rare red carpet appearance. So Michael Richards, pretty much the first casualty of the internet cancellation age with this super
He racist. Was the Wizard of Oz / Sopranos.
There's been a lot of
the internet cancellation age. You see, it's like a human centipede of different advents. Within
this is the episode of Advents, and I didn't even realize
the episode of Advents, and I thought Advent season was over here.
No, I guess spring is rebirth. All sorts of Advents coming out right now.
Oh, lovely.
Including Michael Richards' new autobiography.
Are you going to read it?
Well, I wanted to ask you this.
It'd be funny if it was just the title was just the N-word. Maybe he doesn't have to say it, but the N-word.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be like, damn, he did it.
He's just there, like, in a very sophisticated author pose, like, black and white portrait with his arms crossed or, like, you know, hand on his chin like Steve Jobs. But the title of the memoir is Entrances and Exits, and I wanted to ask you just what your curiosity level would be for an autobiography like this.
Called Entrances and Exits or specifically an autobiography by him?
Both, because it's the same thing.
As a thespian, I love the idea of entrances and exits. It's I told you earlier title. In this conversation I was looking for an exit.
It's a great title.
And now here I see an entrance, so I'm going to tie the two. I love entrances and exits. I love making both.
Right.
Oh, God. I don't have much interest in most of the cast of Seinfeld.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guess who would be the most interesting to me?
Is Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
For sure. Because I watched Veep.
Right.
But I haven't seen much Seinfeld. And I haven't missed a single episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, but I haven't seen Seinfeld. I also don't think if I revisited it, it would hold up. Because sitcoms, in a weird way, have aged like...
Especially ones with laugh tracks.
Like cheese? Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially ones with laugh tracks. But even then, like with live audiences, like I'm not sure my ear could tell one from the other.
Well, either way, just like, you know, whether it's live or a laugh track, just the constant, you know, reminder of when to laugh is just...
Feels archaic.
A thing of the past.
Even like movies that are too scored, which I want to talk about Challengers for a little bit towards the end here. Okay. But I find even like soundtracking to be sometimes too overwhelming.
Yeah.
If it's just music, sometimes I'm like, how is this serving the scene? Like, so.
Well.
But Michael Richards, by the way, really quickly.
Yeah.
Looked Cuban in those photos of him with Jerry Seinfeld on the red carpet.
He's in his Tio era.
His Tio era.
And if he was Cuban, he would be saying that word a lot. So kind of makes
And
sense.
Also, what do you mean ran into him on the red carpet? So they were estranged?
No. It said reunites.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So right. I'm sure.
Well, okay. Jerry's well, like, I guess we reunited tonight too, everybody. Wow.
Jerry's like, you have a new book, Michael. Come plug the new book. Come walk the way. From the moment that he got canceled, had that tirade, that very racist tirade, Jerry was trying his best to like champion him, and you know, still did
respect.
He had him
because we stand by the canceled here at Guantanamo Bay's podcast.
Yeah, you more than me, but he,
but some of the canceled.
No. Well, you know, not all cancellations are created equal.
Right, I mean,
there's room for nuance.
Right, Aziz, if you want to come on, we love you.
Oh yeah, no, Aziz, he was.
Sorry, I didn't mean to distract you.
No, it's okay. I just mean
Brian's
like
standing up, pacing.
No, not at all. I just mean he was. I think we culturally clocked that Me Too, it kind of jumped the shark in a sense, or like kinda, we were just like, okay, this cancellation doesn't feel like as warranted.
Well, and people forget that Jerry Seinfeld also said the N-word.
When?
He made B-movie. I mean, I know it's not as bad, but remember that fucking
movie? No, but he did date a 17-year-old when he was 34.
So. And I oop.
And I oop?
And I oop. That's what a drag queen says.
Oh, really?
You don't have to, yeah. It's okay. It's just internet speak among to gays.
Oh, yeah. Whenever you, like, make a mistake or something like that, like, and I oop.
Or if someone, like, proves you right, you're like, and I oop.
Oh, that's
or, like, funny. If you hear something juicy, and I oop.
That's funny.
And, yeah. Also, let's talk about challengers.
Go ahead.
You haven't seen it yet. Of course not.
What do you mean, of course not?
Well, because you don't have my schedule. You know, you can't just off to the movie theater at 1 p.m. on a Friday.
Yeah, that's true. I can't.
I also knew this week would be busier just in terms of, like, prepping for school stuff. So I saw it the day it came out on Friday at, like, 1 p.m.
Amazing.
Loved it.
Yeah.
My friend read ahead and read that they didn't actually have intercourse. And so he was the two guys. So for the listeners, challengers. Can you
spoil the movie for me?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Not necessarily. In fact, I won't get into the specifics of this.
Sounds like you might have.
But it's about a love triangle.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I spoiled it.
Okay.
But now I guess I won't talk about it much. But it was very good.
I didn't mean to. Well, you just said, like, they read ahead and. I don't know the movie at all. So.
That shouldn't be a spoiler.
Okay.
But now I'm so sensitive to spoilers that now I'm like, oh, forget I said anything. But I will say this about it. It had my friend in my psychology class called it like a return to like maximalism, which is interesting because stylistically it is pretty maximalist. Was overscored. That kind of distracted me. There were times where I'm like, why is the soundtrack playing?
Am I crazy? And I just, you know, I want to hear what you say about challengers, but Zendaya is the maximalist actor of our time.
I can't respond to that now that I've told you that I'm not talking shit about people.
I don't think it's a bad thing.
No. I disagree with that. And that's all I'll say.
Okay. I just mean maybe not her specifically, but the production she's in. Like,
oh, it's kind of the return of like the movie star schedule.
Right. So
and like the breadth of movie star projects.
Yeah.
Which
I
like
hope
Jennifer
so.
Lawrence, I think, kind of kicked that off for this generation.
For this generation, yeah.
But it wasn't, I mean, I can't remember her having two back to back like this, where it was like Dune 2 and then Challengers, which has like the aura of like a prestige art flick.
Right, right. Which I guess, you know, she was pretty busy with Hunger Games, which would have been the thing.
That's true. That's a good point. But it's essentially about the world of pro tennis. Mm-hmm. And it's about a love triangle with Zendaya and these two professional tennis players that have to face off in a competition years later after their shared history.
Right.
So that's all I'll say in terms of the plot.
Right.
But I was very excited by it. And I don't know if I'd call it maximalist necessarily, but it did have like this like post vaporwave kind of feel, if that makes any sense.
Go ahead.
Like, you're like, please try to explain what you're talking about. Like, so Spring Breakers, to me, is kind of the quintessential vaporwave film in its coloring, and it's like grimy and feels like a Greg Araki movie, but is more fluorescent and has more of like a day glow kind of 2012 EDC vibe to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know what you mean.
Okay, cool. And then I think because Hollywood kind of entered a phase of being more minimalist because of all sorts of circumstances. Me too. COVID. Mm-hmm. I mean, name it. Like the
introspective, the industry, that kind of retreaty.
It retreated to like a more introspective place. Mm-hmm. And so this has more of like a shock factor component to it that is just fun. And maybe it panders to Zoomers on TikTok, but it was exciting.
Yeah.
And talk about movement, like a film about movement. I mean, it's literally about tennis players, but just the way it's edited together and the camera work and stuff just had sort of a, and that for me, I could usually feel it within a few minutes of watching a film, of like starting a film, is if it's kind of, if it's ingesting me into its rhythm.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
You know? I'd compare Challengers to Saltburn in that it's like pretty gay.
I've heard that.
And so Saltburn was pretty much completely shafted by the Academy. So who knows? I mean, they may shy away from this, but maybe it's sexier because one of the horned up protagonists isn't just a man, it's Zendaya.
I was about to say the gender switchingness of it all. Saltburn getting completely shut out is kind of a slap in the face, because it came out like in award season. People really liked it. It was the talk of the town. It had great acting performances.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think maybe just like a white guy fucking up everyone's life, including women, you know, along mm-hmm. the way, is just like not the moment. Zendaya though, doing that to two white dudes. Hey, we could be had here.
Interesting.
We could be had.
You seem to know quite a bit about the movie.
I listened to the Pop Culture Happy Hour on it. NPR. Yeah. But they said nothing about male intercourse. Or, you know, they said that there was like a triangle, but not like, did they definitely do something or not?
Okay.
So that was the only thing where I was like, oh my God, was there something that I didn't know about that I was.
Well, we definitely did something today. And that was a hell of an episode.
It was a hell of an episode. We hope that it was lighter, breezy fare than the dense geopolitical, you know, conversations we often bring to you here.
And the thing about Cuba is there's always going to be another story, kid.
It ain't going anywhere.
It's like Hollywood. There's always going to be another star.
We're going to have a lot of stuff for you guys in the coming weeks. But for now, I'm Brian Bogart.
And I'm Jalene Gosa.
Thank you guys so much. Good night.